So somebody asked me on this retreat I just held, Pat Coffey lead, if I gave a talk, and I said, yes, I did. And they said, what did you talk about? And I said, I talked about bodhicitta. And they said, oh, please, please talk about that here. We want to hear this. So at first I was like, yeah, I'll just pull out my talk and, you know, give the same talk. But then when I sat with it, it's changed. It's not the same message that I wanted to give. As you can tell from the meditation that we did, what I'm realizing more and more, no matter who I come into contact with, who I work with, within my difficulties within myself, as well as with other people, that what I realize is that all anybody needs, wants to be whole and to heal is to be loved. It's so simple, but not easy, right? So this path that we're on, this, you know, coming together to meditate, it looks like we're just sitting here and following our breath, but it's actually a journey home to our hearts, a journey home to wholeness. And bodhicitta is part of this process. Bodhi stands for the awakened or the enlightened, and citta is the consciousness or the heart-mind. So the Buddha did not distinguish between the heart and mind. They saw the heart-mind as one unit that works together in a beautiful and powerful way. So here's what Pema Chodron says about bodhicitta. Sometimes the completely open heart and mind of bodhicitta is called the soft spot, a place as vulnerable and tender as an open wound. It is equated in part with our ability to love. Even the cruelest people have this soft spot. Even the most vicious animals love their offspring. As Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche put it, everybody loves something, even if it's only tortillas. So the Theravada and Mahayana Buddhism sects both teach about the Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva is a person who chooses to perfect their bodhicitta, to open their heart to this awakened heart-mind. And they vow to help all others awaken to their bodhicitta as well. But the Mahayanas, I come from the Theravadan lineage. In fact, a fellow came to the half-day Saturday, and he wanted to talk to me afterwards. He said, I came in the Mahayana tradition to where bodhisattva, you know, the path of the bodhisattva, the path of bodhicitta was the most important thing, that all of us are supposed to become bodhisattvas. And he said, but the Theravada and all you guys keep talking about is awakening. And I don't know that I like that. So I told him that even the Buddha did not teach us that we all had to become bodhisattvas. What he did is that when he awakened to his own bodhicitta, bodhisattva-ness, when the heart opens and there aren't any obstructions, then the only thing that's left is this love. And the only way to connect with others is through this place. And so naturally, people who awaken to bodhicitta are going to usually become bodhisattvas. It's a very natural progression, because you're just going to love everybody from this pure heart. So I said, even though Mahayanas stress it, Theravadan, all the monks and everything that we do is all about becoming a bodhisattva at some level, to awaken to this bodhicitta, heart-mind. So I think it's really important to not just sit here and conceptualize about this heart, mind, pure, enlightened, awake. You know, we've had glimpses of it, we've touched upon it, but how do we embody this? How do we really accept that this is our true nature, right? I think what really helps me is to think back to the bodhisattvas in my life. People that you've been going through your life, you know, as a child or however old you were, and their love, their way of being with you was so powerful in some way that it changed the course of your life. That it changed the course of how you look at yourself or look at other people. Does anybody feel like they have someone like, some people like that in their life? Just a few of us? I hope you all do. The very first one that I can remember was my sixth grade teacher. This old lady, we called her Mrs. B, but her name was Ann Boyden or something like that. And before I met her, I had no confidence in myself. I got good grades, but I felt like they were just from good luck, you know. And I was really shy and quiet and wasn't a social person at all, and I was scared of my own shadow, basically. And for some reason, Mrs. B, she was one of the most loving people. She was an older lady. And she just loved and saw the beauty in each and every one of the students. So she used to tell us regularly the things she appreciated about us. Right? And no one had ever done this before. And I flowered under her love, under her care. And she would bring us bowling. She brought us out to picnics and, you know, a lot of special events that no other teachers would. And she laughed at our stupid jokes. So she really marveled in the beauty of us kids, and we flowered under her love and care. So to me, she's my first bodhisattva. So this awakening our hearts to this infinite pool of love, peace, and wisdom that is, as the Buddha taught us, our true nature. This is who we really are. But how do we do it? How do we access it? How do we feel this and know this as a fact? The first thing we do is we strengthen our courage to open our hearts in the face of hatred, in the face of confusion and fear. Right? Somewhere along the way, we've shut our hearts down, we've closed it off to protect ourselves. And the only way to heal this heart, to feel bodhisattva, is to open it in the face of all of this. And it takes a tremendous amount of courage. So we're not cultivating the heart because the heart is already pure and beautiful. We're cultivating the courage to open ourselves up to this heart. We're becoming an advocate for ourselves and for others by doing this as well. And it's scary because we're exposing ourselves to a lot of potential pain. So who are some of the bodhisattvas that we've known in history, perhaps recently or not so recently?
Gandhi.
Who?
Gandhi.
King.
Martin
Luther King.
Oh, yeah.
The Dalai Lama.
Desmond
Tutu.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people feel that Obama's fits into that category as well. Yeah, there's so many. Mother Teresa?
Maybe.
They're all debatable, right? But there was some aspect of them where they had the courage, the willingness to open their heart and expose their heart and show it to others and to help others with their love. So the Buddha taught that we're never separated from our enlightened heart mind. Even at times when we feel most stuck, we're never alienated from our awakened state. It's there underneath everything. All we have to do is access it. In the Mahanama Sutta, the Buddha said, just as oil rises to the top of a pot submerged in water, your virtue, goodness, faith, and generosity will rise to the top. And that is what will carry you to your next destination. So I think this is pretty refreshing to hear that. That we don't have to cultivate this loving, beautiful, open heart that's already there. And it gives me a lot of, gives me more courage to know that it's there. But what's happened that we don't feel it all the time? Right? Somehow we've forgotten, we become disconnected from bodhicitta state, our natural state. It's become eclipsed by our neuroses and fears and this hardened crust that we've developed in order to deal with the world, the cold and sometimes very cruel world. So that we get lost and, you know, when we get disconnected into the ego mind. So I like to look at it that we have this ego mind that helps us navigate the world, right? And then our true nature is bodhicitta, which holds everything. And our ego mind is part of, it's in this, it's part of the whole process. But we've lost sight of the bodhicitta. We only see the ego mind and we get lost in grasping and having expectations and getting lost in our fear and our anger and our confusion, and that's all we see when we're lost like that. So we want to do whatever it takes to cultivate this boundless love, like we did at the end of the meditation today, trying to open our hearts in whatever ways that we can. The Buddha taught, he often talked about his past lives. And he called himself, when I was just a bodhisattva. So this is an enlightened being who's on the path to awakening so that they can help all beings, right? And if you want to read about his stories, you can look up the Jataka tales, J-A-T-A-K-A tales. And there are all these stories about him when he was an enlightened being. And he was going through all his previous lives trying to perfect the paramis, or the paramitas, which are the 10 qualities or perfections that he taught us that we have to perfect if we want to have bodhicitta, this awakened heart mind. Does anybody know what the 10 perfections are right off the top of their head? Besides loving kindness? Okay, I won't give you a quiz. But I'll tell you, loving kindness is one of them, of course. And all of these work together. And there are different tales and stories about that he told, that how he was working in this lifetime to perfect this quality or that quality. And one quality is patience. One is morality, or the ethical parts. Discipline. Takes discipline to be a spiritual person and to keep working at improving and looking honestly. Honesty is another one. Wisdom, energy, takes energy to do this practice. Generosity. In fact, there's one story, Jataka tale, that's one of my favorite. He was a human being and he saw a lion and her cubs. They were starving to death. And so he threw himself off of a cliff right at their feet and killed himself to give his body to save the lion and her cubs. So that lifetime he was trying to perfect generosity. Wow. Yeah. Renunciation, so he renunciated obviously his life. And of course equanimity. Those are the 10 qualities. If you want to access bodhicitta regularly, perfect those qualities within yourself. So I want to bring up Charlottesville, since it's so big in our psyche right now and what's going on in our... Anybody feel like this is a big thing that's going on right now?
Yeah.
And how the heck does bodhicitta fit into all of this? Right? You know, all these great bodhisattvas that you mentioned, did they fight hatred with violence?
No.
Right? They all were following the nonviolent route, right? And that's what made them so powerful. And what we're seeing here in Charlottesville is that people are responding to the violence, to the hatred, some with beautiful love, like the woman who got killed was espousing nonviolence. And some of them acted out with their own set of anger, right, as to what's going on. But this is what the Buddha said about situations like this. He said, hatred does not cease through hatred at any time. Hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases through love alone. Hatred ceases through love alone. This is an unalterable law. Nonviolence. And here's another quote by the Buddha. Better than 1,000 hollow words is one word that brings peace. Right? So the question becomes, how can we bring hatred and angry people and confused people into our hearts and not become overcome by hatred and anger ourselves? How can we maintain our own bodhicitta or share what bodhicitta that we've tapped into through our practice already with others? That becomes the question. Martin Luther King, he says, let no man pull you so low as to hate him. Let no man pull you so low as to hate him. Powerful words from a bodhisattva. So as I taught in the retreat, there are three primary ways or steps that are preparing us for to be able to access bodhisattva in the face of violence and hatred or any situation. The first is abstaining from evil, abstaining from unethical behavior, abstaining from acting out our own anger, our own hatred, our own confusion. So I look at it that if I'm beset with anger, hatred, and confusion, then I need to go work on my own, you know, and heal this. Open my heart to this anger, open my heart to this confusion, and open it to the bodhicitta and let it heal and transmute. And then take engaged in loving action even in the face of hatred. But don't add more evil to what's already out there. The second thing is to purify the mind. Isn't that what we're doing here? Through our meditation practice? That's what the meditation is doing. It's purifying the mind and the heart. It's opening us up so that we can heal all these different holes within our psyches. And the third thing that he told us to do is to cultivate good. Cultivate good. Cultivating good is practicing the 10 paramis, right? Practicing generosity, loving kindness, sharing our bodhicitta heart. That sounds like a country song, doesn't it? Share your bodhicitta heart. Maybe we can come up with... Someone said, wait a minute, who was saying bodhicitta heart? Somebody... Anyhow, I do. You'll notice I make up songs, but... anyhow. Yeah, sharing your bodhicitta heart with other people. To me, this is about living a life with an open heart versus living a life with a closed and armored and frightened and defended heart. And each moment we have a choice. Can I open my heart to this moment? And if not, if there's armoring, what needs to be held with love? What needs to be held with kindness? What needs to be held and healed through this limitless pool of bodhicitta that we have? So I'm curious now. I'm going to open it up to the group in a moment. Just wanting to hear, if you're willing to share, what helps you? First of all, who have been the bodhisattvas in your life? How have they made a difference in your life? The second bodhisattva I had in my life, I've had a lot of little bodhisattvas, but this one was in college. He was my psychology professor. And he, I was a type A personality, had to get straight A's. Just tell me what I need to do so I can get the A. Don't mess with me. That was my personality. That's what I wanted to do. I didn't want to socialize. I didn't want to laugh or joke or have fun. I just wanted to get the A. Right? So I walk in there with all my books, and I read the first few chapters. I was ready for this class. And he was sitting cross-legged on his desk. And then he said, "What does the word I mean?" This was the first class. I was like, really? I? What the hell is that supposed to be? Of course, you know. And then so first we had to discuss what I meant, and I'm just sitting there rolling my eyes. And then he said, "Can you drop that word from your vocabulary?" And so I didn't know this, but he was a Zen master. And he was one of the most beautiful, loving, kind people I'd ever met, patient. He was a healer as well. And so he's the one that helps turn me off of the type A path onto a healing modality, a practicing, at least turn me in that direction. Yeah. So I'd love to hear about your bodhisattvas, about how you access bodhicitta, how you work on healing anything that's in your way of accessing bodhicitta. Your challenges, your successes, whatever. And thank you so much for listening.